It is late spring, and I am pulling pondweed. My mother likes to fish for brim and catfish, and the pondweed is her enemy. Her fishing line gets caught in it, and she says the fish feed on it, ignoring her bait. "That old pondweed will take the place," Mama says. All my life, I've heard her issue this dire warning. She says it of willow trees, spiderwort, snakes, and Bermuda grass. "That old Bermudy won't leave her flower beds alone." The pondweed is lovely. If it were up to me, I'd just admire it and let the fish have it. But then I'm spoiled and lazy and have betrayed my heritage as a farmer's daughter by leaving the land and going off to see the world. Mama said I always had my nose in a book. I didn't want to have to labor the way my parents did. But here I am, on a visit, wrestling with pondweed. I'm working with a metal-toothed rake with a yellow nylon rope tied to the handle to extend its reach. I stand on the pond bank, my Walmart Wellingtons slopping and sucking mud. I fling the rake as far as I can, catch the pondweed, and then tug it loose. An island of it breaks off and comes floating toward me, snared by the rake. I haul it in and heave it onto the bank. The pondweed is a heavy mass of white, fat tendrils and a black tangle of wiry roots beneath the surface scattering of green leaves. Along with my rake full of weed comes a treasure of snails, spiders, water striders, crawfish, worms, and insect larvae. A whole ecosystem, as in a tide pool. I haul out as much as I can lift, waterlogged, shiny leaves and masses of tendrils, some of them thick and white like skinned snakes. I rescue a crawfish. It wriggles back into its mud tunnel. As I work, the bank gets clogged with piles of weed. I am making progress. There is an unexpected satisfaction in the full range of athletic motion required for this job. I think about hard labor and wonder whether some of my fitness-minded friends with their rigid exercise routines could be talked into helping me out. I've seen water lotus covering a lake, smothering it with plate-sized pads. Water lotus are giant lilies, double-story affairs that make gigantic seed pods resembling showerheads. Water lotus are a disaster if what you want is fish. Even without any lotus, this pond has seen disasters before. 3 fish kills, a fuel spill from the highway, warm water runoff from a tobacco warehouse fire, and a flood that washed the fish out into the creek. In the early 80s, my father hired a backhoe to create the pond so that my mother could go fishing, her favorite pastime. He cut down a black walnut tree so she could have a view of the pond across the field behind the house. There used to be blackberries at the site of this quarter-acre pond, banks of berry bushes so enormous that we tunneled through them and made a maze. The blackberries were what we called tame. Back in the 40s, my parents planted a dozen bushes to keep the fields from washing into the creek. The blackberries spread along all the borders. The berries were large and luscious, not like the small, seedy, wild ones. But we never ate them with cream and sugar, only in pies or jam. Every July, we picked berries, and Mama sold gallons of them to high-toned ladies in the big fine houses in town. They made jelly. We got 25 cents for a quart of berries, $1 a gallon. It took an hour to pick a gallon, and I could pick up to 4 gallons in a morning before the sun got too hot, before I got chiggers implanted in the skin under my waistband. My fingers were full of thorn pricks and stayed purple all summer. The blackberries haven't disappeared, but they used to be more accessible, less weed-choked. They grew up and down all the creek banks, along the edges of all the fields, along the fence rows, along the lane. My father burned down masses of them before digging the pond. The pond feeds into Kess Creek, which cuts across this farm, the place where I grew up and where my mother still lives.